Topic of this workshop is a serving of hope, food plans. My name is Marie S., and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'd like to introduce the speakers for this workshop. We have Aaron F., Kelly S., and Catherine N. Let's start the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things
the thing I can. And the wisdom to know the difference.
We're starting with Aaron.
Hi, everybody. I'm so glad I can see a few of you, the lovely support people and my other panelists. It's sort of a weird, nebulous sort of, are there people out there? I am very, very grateful to be here. I'm Erin. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict. So we're going to talk about my experience with a food plan today and three of the sort of prompts we were given to consider when we were talking today were a plan of eating, food problems, and then food partners in recovery. So I think I'd like to start out with, I'll probably bounce all over, honestly, but I'd like to start out with a plan of eating. I was looking this morning as I was sort of, I don't tend to write out when I speak. I maybe make a couple bullet points and perhaps I actually get to those, but I tend to be sort of a higher powers got it kind of speaker. So, but I did this morning take a glance at our Where Do I Start pamphlet, our newcomer pamphlet that took over for the newcomer packet. And I was sort of glancing through that and I marked something that I just thought I would share to sort of kick off here. So it really stuck out to me, which is under developing a plan of eating in that paragraph on page 8, it says, initially, many of us use a daily plan of eating, which includes what, when, where, and how much. This daily plan serves to separate our eating from our emotions and relieve us of making the decisions we formerly had to make throughout the day. Reducing the time we think about food clears our heads of the ongoing conflict between our self-will and the disease. We also find that we are more likely to stick to our plan if we commit it daily to a sponsor. As in the rest of the program, we do this one day at a time. We do not have to think about doing it forever. Oh my gosh, thank goodness, right? Woo, I don't want to think about doing this forever, but one day at a time, I have found that that has been doable. What I did like, that the real line that stuck out to me was that this daily plan serves to separate our eating from our emotions and relieves us of making the decisions we formerly had to make throughout the day. That's, you know, what a novel idea, right? That I didn't have to just be sort of guided through the day by all of my emotions, which always led me to eating. So what I will say with my plan of eating, just to be specific, it is definitely evolved. What it looks like now is that I weigh some things. I'm sort of a hybrid. And I think there are many people I know who do the same thing, a hybrid of OA how, and just regular OA. And so I weigh things that I always want more of. I weigh the things where when I put it on the plate, I think that can't possibly be enough. And I know what those things are. So I weigh those. I don't particularly weigh vegetables. I'm not a volume eater around that kind of stuff. I'm a sugar eater and I have had 3 years of abstinence from all sugar and that is my drug of choice. So that's not to say though that other things when we talk about food problems have come up. But as far as my plan of eating, right now I do 3 meals a day and a snack if I need it. You know, need is sort of a, I don't know, sometimes I'm hungry and sometimes maybe I have that snack because, you know, I want it. That's the truth of it. And I'm one of those of us that I eat a lot of the same things day in and day out. I have sort of a, you know, a good amount of different food items I can eat, but I'm a creature of habit. I really am a creature of habit. I eat the same things in different rotations throughout my week. So I already sort of know I've had a lot of enjoyment with food over the years. And I know there are people who are like, it's really important. And higher powers tell me, has said, I need to really enjoy my food. And I do appreciate my food, but I've had a lot of enjoyment with food over the years. And now I just really need food to be food for me. I do not need it to be anything sexy or fancy or anything at all. So the sort of less exciting it is, for me personally, that's just my experience, the better it is. but it's still delicious. So that's my food plan. And I will say that it has evolved. When I first came into program, I came in 2003. I was in for a couple of years. I like to say I did everything that was asked of me except for get a sponsor and work the steps. And that did not work out so well. I left after a couple of years because I got some physical recovery and I thought that I had made it, right? I had it. Came back in 2017 and my food plan then was three meals a day, I think two snacks and one plate. So it could look like anything, whatever I could fit on a plate. And that was just to put some boundaries around my food, which I found really helpful. And it helped me sort of start to suss out when I was hungry. Well, that's actually not true. It just put some boundaries around my food. And then it has morphed. It's morphed to what I have been told by my higher power are reasonable amounts, right food for me. I feel good about what I eat. And in the morning, I write down what I eat for breakfast. Sometimes I'll write my whole food plan for the day. If I'm feeling a little bit wonky, I'll write the whole thing out. Other days, and most days, I'm able to sort of write as I go because I'm a creature of habit. But I can tell those days where I'm feeling like, oh, I feel vulnerable or I'm having feelings. I'm like, it's probably best if I sort of just plan out what I'm eating. If I go somewhere and I don't think I'm going to be able to get home, I more often than not take food with me. I've been in that situation many a times. So I have learned the hard way that I should have food with me because when I'm hungry, all bets are off. When I'm really hungry. So that's what that looks like. And then at the end of the day, I send that to, and we can move into food partners and recoveries and sponsors. I send that to my food partner, which I will also talk about, and my sponsor. At the end of the day, I send my sponsor all of my food. My food partner, we are both of the ilk that we like to check in when we have our meals. I use a scale for my hunger, like an internal scale for my hunger. And if anybody has questions about that, you're more than welcome to ask, but like, it sort of lets me know how hungry I am. And when I'm done, that works for me. And I check in before I eat. And I also have started taking a picture of my food. I have a lot of people that I know and fellows that do this, and I've never done it. I have a couple sponsees that do it, that send me their food and pictures, and I've never really considered it. But I'll tell you, it's been a really, like, I'm open to trying new things. And I'm like, I'm going to try that. So I have been doing that for, I don't know, maybe a month or maybe 2 months now. I don't know, something around there. It doesn't really matter how long. And it's been real helpful for me. Also, as I get older, I have a harder time remembering what I ate. So I can go back and look at my pictures and be like, oh, right, that's what I had for lunch. So that is something that I do throughout the day with my partner in recovery. I do not do that with my sponsor. And then at the end of the day, I send what I ate that day to both of those people. What I will say, I feel teary. I feel tears welling up. What I will say about sending my food to my sponsor and to my food partner, that has evolved over the years as well. I do ask my sponsees to send me their food. I don't care what they eat. I don't have any opinion about it at all. What it has done for me is that I have slowly but surely gotten really honest with my food. And that is, boy, I never wanted anybody to know what I was eating. I was so ashamed, you know, about my lack of self-will, right? And obviously I was different from anybody else and you all had self-will and I was the only one that couldn't quit eating, you know, or wanted to eat like the whole cake and not two bites and push it away. Like I didn't understand that. So when I send my food at night, more often than not, I'm really honest. And then sometimes, you know, like whether it's me or God, you know, the next day I'll be like, oh yeah, I had that thing. I didn't. And I'll be like, oh, and I also had this. It's just, you know, it's for me noticing where food is, you know, a symptom of something else that's going on for me. So when I have sort of the foods that I eat and I find that, you know, for some reason, all of a sudden my food plan doesn't look good. The food plan that worked for me yesterday, no, it's somehow not enough, no longer the right thing. There's probably something going on. So it's a good indicator. I do this program imperfectly. And I consider myself a perfect human being because I think we're all imperfect. So I'm humaning perfectly. I like to give myself a little, like I'm humaning really well. My food partner is it came about very, very organically. And at a meeting that I don't normally go to. And we've been doing this now, I want to say a couple of years. And yeah, I need the reminder throughout the day. And I need somebody to know what I'm eating and what I'm doing with my food. And so that's just, you know, that's how we do it. And I know there's a million ways that people do this. It's not, you know, so many different ways. So if you're curious about that, please, you know, ask at your meetings, you know, what people do with food partners, because I would also, I'd love to know too. I'm open to new things. So food problems. So, you know, for any newcomers out there, don't worry about this right now. Like, it really is a day at a time. But I do also want to address those of us that have been in program like a little bit, which I, you know, I consider I'm, you know, I've been here a little bit, and the road has gotten narrower. There were foods that I could eat when I first got abstinent that got to be super interesting throughout different periods of time, and that I really had to ask higher power. And I should just give a big shout out to God. Like, this is all higher power related. Like, my food plan, everything I do is predicated on, like, okay, God, like, because I can't do it on my own. It's not just like a plan that I follow. Like, it's all like, okay, God, right? So let me just really be clear about that. This is not Aaron's like plan. And when it is, it really usually goes badly. But I do want to say that I have been given a lot of grace around the foods that have shown up that I have been really unwilling to let go of by just slowly asking for willingness. And I've been removed of them. And what I will say about that is, if there's a food that's taking up real estate in my brain, I'm thinking about it before I eat it. I'm thinking about it while I'm eating it. I want to eat more after I'm done. Like, I can't have that food. I just like, I mean, I can, but like, I want to meet calamity with serenity. And when I am thinking about like, I want more of that thing, like, I can't be present with you. I can't be present with anybody when I'm thinking about the food I want to eat. So that's how I do it. Like, you know, I do not have the ability to like, just be like, oh, I can have a bite of that. It doesn't, you know, it's fine. Like, if I want a bite of it, I want all of it. So it's just, if it's not an option, it's not a problem. So yeah, the path is narrowed, and that's okay. I never thought I'd say that. I never thought I would say that, because the thought of not having this or something for the rest of my life seemed untenable. I don't have to do that. It's just today, right? And you know, that thing that we talk about, it still comes in handy for me. Like, okay, I want this thing. Okay, I won't have it today. Maybe I'll have it tomorrow, right? It's like a pause, right? That whatever that I'm telling myself, like, I'll have it tomorrow, that's the pause that I need, right? I do say thank you to higher power before I eat a lot of the time, not always. And I ask that my food be enough. And I do it imperfectly. And there are so many other great ways I know that people approach this. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the other panelists. That's what I do. And I've had a pretty sane, happy, joyous, and free existence where food is right-sized for me. And I get to have all of the feelings that I've been having lately, which are not always good, but I'm really grateful to have them all. And I can only do that when I am not in my disease and when I'm sober. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Erin. That was really good. Appreciate it. And next, Kelly S.
Hey, everybody. I am Kelly. I am feeling very nervous, so I'm just going to be quiet for a second. First, I want to say thank you for asking me to be on this panel. Thank you to all of the tech support and the other panelists. So just some more facts about myself. I came into this program in May 2019, so I would consider myself still pretty new. And then I've been my version of abstinent since like September of 2019. This morning, I was doing kind of my daily reading and writing, and every day I read for today. And I decided to kind of flip around it. And there were two passages that I just wanted to read quickly that really spoke to me. One of them is from January 19th. So it says, I have never seen a person grow or change in a constructive direction when motivated by guilt, shame, and or hate. William Goldberg. If you eat too much, you're a glutton. If you weigh too much, you won't be popular with the boys or girls. Heaping new guilt upon old, I tried to reform myself. I dieted, lost weight. There, now I look terrific. But for how long? And did I like myself any better inside? All of the remedies I tried, only in OA did I feel accepted for what I was, not for what I might become. Only in OA did I feel my problem was nothing to be ashamed of. Only in OA was I able to lose the weight and keep it off without guilt, without shame, without self-hate. For today, I let no one, including myself, try to shame me into changing something about myself I wished were different. I pray to be relieved of guilt and self-hate and to accept and like myself exactly as I am. That is where I can begin to change. And then the second one is one that I actually always have marked for myself. And it's from August 19th, funny enough, January and August 19th. The remedy of all blunders, the cure of blindness, the cure of crime is love. Ralph Waldo Emerson. All growth, all healing depends on love. Love is what God is all about. A loving God, as I understand God, does not preach or dictate or threaten. God is my backer, supportive of me, no matter what I do. God does not make deals. Do this and I'll do that. God does not bully or punish or say, I told you so. God listens and accepts me as I am, loves me as I am. God doesn't give advice. God knows that learning comes only from experience. Experience I am not led to until I am ready. For today, God's perfect love is mine anytime I am willing to receive it. I let go of the God of my childhood and believe with all my heart in this God that brought me here and gave me new life. The first time I ever read this, I cried. I cry a lot, so it's not unheard of. But what really stuck out to me was the phrase, God knows that that learning comes only from experience. Experience I am not led to until I am ready. So I'm going to bounce around as well. And much like Erin, I don't overly prepare, but I read a couple notes. So for me, food partners, food problems, finding your food plan all kind of meshes together. I came into OA because I had food problems, you know, much like many fellows that I've talked to. I always convinced myself I was in control of my food and I would lose a bunch of weight and then, you know, wouldn't be able to control myself any longer. And I just thought I had a control problem. And I got desperate enough to come in to the rooms in May and desperate enough to stay, even though I didn't want to belong. But what I first did in program is that I realized I needed to be honest about my food. So not going to try to control it the way that I'd always done, but just be honest first with the people that I lived with. And this is a big deal because I am the kind of eater that hides. So I have never really been the type of person who eats too much at a particular meal. I hide food. I eat sugar in the middle of the night. I will eat as many snacks as possible when I think you're not paying attention. I will hide things in the trash. I will ask you to leave, you know, in a quote unquote kind way. And I have a very loving housemate that I had been pushing to go to her ceramic studio a lot. So the very first thing that I did is that when I wanted to eat my addictive foods, which are mostly sugar, I did it in front of her and I did it in front of people. And this was really hard. It was really, really hard. And it felt really embarrassing, but I was, you know, I didn't really understand higher power at the time. I still don't, obviously, but I believe I have faith now. But that was a pretty strong indication that I got, which was that it was really important for me to be honest with the people I was closest to in my life so that I could be close to them. So first I was just honest about food and I didn't try to change the way I ate, the kind of compulsiveness. And through that honesty, I started to get honest with some food partners. I met some people in program. I didn't have a sponsor at the time, but I met some people in program, including one woman who ended up being my kind of 12-day sponsor. And I started to feel really comfortable around her and we started to be honest about our food together. And that just looked like texting before we ate and after we ate something. And that just kind of continued for a while. And that again was kind of a gateway for me to begin to be honest further in my life, less so just about I'm binging right now and I'm going to do it in front of you, and more becoming honest about what my day-to-day food looked like. And through that partnership, I became more willing to look at what really worked for me food-wise in terms of a food plan. So the food plan that I follow and I've followed since September is 3 meals a day. No snacks. I don't eat any sugar. I'm a sugar addict, but I really think of that. It's pretty simple. But it's kind of a guardrails for myself. So, you know, similarly, where I get in trouble is when my food mixes with my emotions and I start eating over how I feel. So by having guardrails in the morning And at night about, I have three meals. I have breakfast, I have lunch, I have dinner. I stopped mixing emotions with food. It kind of took that out of it. And now when I want food in between one of those meals, it's easier for me to realize that there's something else going on. And I am more likely to reach out to a fellow, do some writing, use one of the kind of tools of the program. So that's kind of how I also deal with food problems now, by having these kind of, again, guardrails of three meals a day. It allows me to be a little bit more present in my life in terms of when food isn't so much about food, when food is about emotions. Being new to the program, I'm also willing to see what my food plan evolves into. At the moment, I don't weigh and measure anything. And other than sugar, I can eat just about anything. Again, for me, where I get in trouble is those kind of late nights when I'm just kind of bored or sad, or even sometimes overly joyous. If I have just too many emotions about anything, I want to tamper it down with some kind of food. So by knowing that I can only have three meals, it again takes that away. Another big thing for me that I have realized actually only over the past couple of months is that I am a restrictor as well. I never thought of myself that way because I never really denied myself food throughout the day, but I've come to the realization that when stressed in particular, I would just won't eat. I kind of use that to control one part of my life. So if I feel particularly stressed and out of control, I will use the opposite of food. I will restrict food for myself in order to feel in control of something, which then will lead to binging later. So having, again, those guardrails of the three meals a day for myself also stops me from that. And I have found in program, you know, again, like I said, this is only something I've realized semi-recently, that I have a harder time not, say, skipping breakfast. And I just have to be really honest about, you know, did I skip breakfast because I have a headache, which of course happens because, again, I do this imperfectly and I'm a human being who has feelings and body pains and doesn't feel great in the morning sometimes. Or did I skip breakfast because I decided I just needed to check all of my work emails and get stressed out about that and I didn't need to eat. So again, coming back around to honesty, I continue to have food partners. I've had a couple different ones come and go. I have one person in particular that we send our food to each other throughout the day. And then I share my food with my sponsor at the end of the day. And I just text a list of what I've eaten. And, you know, again, I try to be honest about what I really ate. And it's also a great time. I always do it for me. This is like a personal thing from higher power. I text literally right before I'm about to go to bed. I have to be like, have brushed my teeth and in my bed, because again, I know that the dishonest eater in me, if I texted her and said, oh, these were all my meals, and I was still walking around the house and not about to go to sleep, my brain can get into a tricky situation where it decides, oh, well, you could eat something and it doesn't count for the day because you already sent your food. So it's really important to me to text like when I'm about to go to sleep, when I'm not going to get up. So I think that it's really been interesting sharing my food with different people. And I think that's something I wanted to talk about as someone new in the program, because, you know, it took a lot of courage for me to share my food with the people I live with. It took a lot of courage for me to share my food with my fellows. And I had been doing that for a while when I got my sponsor, and we sponsored together for a while without me sharing my food with her. And I remember when she asked me, and my initial reaction was no. And I happened to be going to a meeting that evening, and I shared about it. I remember I was just in a state of really curiosity as like, why, you know, why no? And I sat with my higher power for a while about it. And, you know, I ended up coming to the conclusion that it was safe, that I could do it. But I think the message I'm trying to impart here is that, you know, you can be chugging along and feel like you're being really honest with everybody and, oh, I'm doing so well. I can get into that part of my head sometimes. But I'm always surprised by the kind of food barriers that come up day to day and how hard it can be to be honest with people. You know, that's, I think, just my ego and wanting to be perfect in this program, which I am not. And I am slowly learning that I get a lot of love. Like I said, right, God has love for me that I maybe don't have for myself, but I can get a lot of love from other people through being imperfect and sharing that. And that's been the greatest gift for me through this program. And, you know, my food plan is 3 meals a day, but it's also to be honest with the people around me and my fellows in program and my sponsor. And that's what keeps me sane. Honestly, that's what keeps me from not going to the food emotionally. And if I keep doing that one day at a time, you know, I think I can make it, hopefully. But, you know, every day is a new day. And then the last thing I will say is, while I don't write down my food every day and what I'm going to eat in the morning, if I'm feeling particularly vulnerable, if I know something big is going to happen, I will kind of write an action plan of my food and send that to my sponsor and say, this is what I'm going to eat today. I'm also kind of a habit eater. So, you know, that can be easy to like jot down exactly what I'm going to eat. And again, that just takes the thinking out of it. I think the last thing I want to say is that being in the program without a sponsor, without a food plan, you know, like take your time to do everything that you want. And if you just have the willingness to believe that your version of higher power will bring these things to you when you are ready, with no shame, no guilt, I really believe that everything happens in God's plan at this point. So it all takes the time it'll take to get honest and use a food plan. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. That was wonderful. And now we will go to Catherine.
Hi, everybody. I'm Catherine, a compulsive overeater. And it's an honor to be here and to be asked to speak on these topics, which are very central to my program. I'm going to do a little bit of background on what it was like for me. And I've got some pictures to show. So if Marie, you got those? Can we go through those pictures first? This is me at about 5 years old with my little Betsy McCall doll. I was put on my first diet at about this time. And I don't know if this picture is a before or after picture, but I look like a pretty normal kid to me. So this is when my focus on weight and food started, and it basically never stopped. Okay, the next picture. So these pictures sort of trace my weight history. You know, I was very obsessed with food, like most of us in program. I tried everything. You know, I tried absolutely everything. I thought, this is me for my senior prom. I actually thought I looked great. I'd been sick. I'd had mono for a month and had lost about 10 pounds and had a lot of time to sit out in the sun because I was sick. But even at 10 pounds, more than this, you can imagine that I was not a huge person, but I felt so fat. You know, I was just always worried about how fat I was. Okay, next. This is me with my little niece and nephew who are in their 30s now. So this was a long time ago. And this is me at my very top weight. You can show the next picture. And this is me after I crashed off the weight on my last very severe weigh and pay. Okay, you can go to the next picture. That lasted for about 3 seconds, and then I gained it all back. And I felt so ashamed that at that point, I was in my late 30s, I gave up. I decided that if I couldn't find a permanent solution, I would rather stay fat than go through the awfulness of losing it and gaining it and losing it and gaining it and losing it and gaining it. It was hard on my emotions. I also knew it was hard on my body. So next picture. And this is me now, you know, in recovery. You can't see the whole thing. I used to always want pictures to be like this. I don't see the whole thing displayed here. I never wanted to show my hips because my hips were always a size or two bigger than my top. So that's, you know, that's my journey. There we go. There's my journey. This is, and so we can be done with the pictures now, but that's a visual journey. So what happened? Well, in February 11th, 1996, a friend introduced me to OA. So it was about 10 years after I had crashed off that last weight. I was 47. So I've been in program 23 years. And I'll tell you, when I walked through the doors, I was an absolute hunk of misery. I was hopeless. I was depressed. And I'm firmly convinced that if I hadn't found OA, I'd probably be dead now, either of my disease or by my own hands, because I was very, very depressed. And in the rooms, I found hope and friendship and a power greater than myself. I've had four sponsors. I've never been without one. I've never quit going to meetings. My journey hasn't been quick. There have been lots of ups and downs. And my current abstinence date is January 1st, 2019. I've surrendered about 85 pounds from my very top weight. With that background, I want to get into the, you know, the topic of this workshop today, which I think is great. So in program, of course, there are many challenges, but one of the biggest ones for me was finding a food plan that worked for me for the long haul. And part of that, because I just wasn't willing, but it was, as someone else has said, Erin said, it's been very, very incremental. You know, I'm a health professional and I knew what healthy eating looked like, but I couldn't do it for any stretch of time. I tried a whole lot of things in these rooms, but the first place I really got solidly abstinent was admitting that I had alcoholic foods. You know, that I used to moan and groan about, God, it'd be so much easier to be an alcoholic because you just have one thing to give. And I finally had to get honest that I had foods that were absolutely no different for me than alcohol for an alcoholic. It basically meant sweets. In the beginning, it was very specific sugary foods that were my binge foods of choice. And that was my first abstinence that I had maintained for a very long time. And overall, sweet and sugary foods was added to that. And you know, that abstinence was, as it says in the big book, it wasn't something I had to fight. It just got to be not an option and I didn't want it. Sometimes things would look tempting and it would be, you know, that's not happening. And I quit eating those foods for many, many years. But I learned that I can compulsively eat on anything. And that despite not eating my alcoholic foods, I was still completely obsessed with what I was eating. When I switched from food plan, you know, trying to find the magic, what was the magic solution, but not realizing the solution was a spiritual one that had to come in here. And that I hadn't accepted the second half of the OA definition that we have now of abstinence, which was relating to giving up food behaviors. So what finally happened to get me where I am now? Well, about 3.5 foods, I was actually having a true relapse. I had started again eating some of my alcoholic foods, although not my very, very bottom line ones. But I was really back in the sugar. My weight was going up and my sponsor fired me. Bless her. I didn't have the courage to do that myself. So she did what I couldn't do for myself. And I got a new sponsor and we began working the big book in a very, very specific, deep way that I'd never done before, even though I had been through the steps several times. And this was a way that's been passed down from sponsor to sponsor. And one of the things she did is slow me down. I love checklists. Tell me what to do, I'll do it. I'm a good student. But no, she'd pull me back. I'd be going ahead and she'd say, let's talk about that some more. Let's talk about that some more. Like, okay. And slowing me down and helping me go deep was so, it changed sort of everything. I got much closer to my higher power, which I currently see as my inner goodness, peace, and illumination. And when I started working with her, I very quickly got off my alcoholic foods again and began eating more healthily, got back to my baseline abstinence. And I got really honest about what I was eating, which meant texting my food to a food partner. And that meant absolutely everything I put in my mouth at the end of every single day. It was something I actually had done for a long time in the past and had gotten away from. But it was really critical for me to do it at the end of the day, because no matter what I planned at the beginning of the day, for me, what was important was being honest with myself and someone else about what I'd actually eaten. It wasn't always easy, but to be able to share it in that non-judgmental environment really reduced a lot of the shame I felt around my food and around my eating, and it's really been important to my recovery. And then about 2 years ago, I very casually mentioned to my sponsor, I said, you know, I'm really a volume eater. And she said, you know, we've been working together a while now. I've never heard you use those words before. And she shared with me how helpful it had been for her to see a nutritionist. And, you know, in God's time, I got willing and I contacted that nutritionist and I got a food plan that was designed just for me. And for some reason, that was really important to me. And it's not that different than what's in Dignity of Choice. But to know that I had that thing for me, that someone had paid attention and listened to my needs and said, this is going to help you. Just, it felt so loving and being taken care of. And I got willing to talk to her. And what that's ended up is that I weigh and measure most days. I eat as instructed by the food plan most days. It is not my abstinence, but it is my guide. And I started out with 3 meals in a stack and then weighed and measured foods. And I've now cut back that down to 3 meals. So I do 3 meals a day. And the miracle is my body, which I've abused so much over my life, now tells me when I'm hungry and when I'm full. I mean, I actually got that back at 71 years of age. It's to me, one of the many miracles of the program. And it's a way I can eat the rest of my life. I do plan my food every morning, and I do it just using the little space on the Region 1 diary. You know, I just fill it in there. And that's very helpful to me because it takes the stress away of thinking about the food. It's like, I know what's there. I know it's in the fridge. It's there for me. So I plan every morning. But there's some other things I do too that are around food plans and voice and partners in recovery. With COVID, because of my age and because I didn't want to be out there, I started planning my major meals for the next 2 weeks and shopping for them. That has really, really helped with the anxiety I had around scarcity. You know, I had scarcity anxiety. God knows, I don't know why. There was always enough food in my family. We had 3 meals a day. Maybe it was having been put on a diet at such a young age. It doesn't really matter. But that really helps. I also have other types of food partners in recovery. I realized that the end of the day was a place where I got anxious around food. And dinner felt like not enough a lot, even though it really was. I put it out in a meeting. And now I have this wonderful group of women who at the end of every day, we text. KC, kitchen closed. And that's developed into a group that we share other things as well. And it's so wonderful. As someone who sort of never felt there was going to be, that it wasn't even worth asking because there wasn't going to be someone there for me, to have that group that is there for me is just the loveliest thing. And I also have someone who I talk with at the end of every night about our feelings so I can get the feelings out of the way. And I weigh in once a month. My sponsor reminds me every month when I get anxious about it that it's just information, but it's an important part of my honesty. So what's life like now? I have serenity I didn't think I'd ever achieve. I live in the present and not in the past, and not too much in the future. I've learned to ask for what I need. And when I don't get it, it's usually for the best. I've had to heal and have he been healed from the notion that I have to do everything on my own, that it wasn't worth asking for help. And my weight continues to very slowly go down in the right direction. I've learned a way to work the program that's really specific and full of wonderful guidance. And I sponsor in that way and see others recovering. I pray daily. I do the set-aside prayer. I do the serenity prayer, the second step prayer, the third step prayer, and the seventh step prayer every day, and quick little prayers throughout the day. I've learned that my higher power is there for me, but it's my responsibility to ask and to take action. And those actions are spelled out with great clarity in the big book. You know, it is such a guideline for living, and having those specifics helps me. All my health measures are in a healthy range. My dad died of all the complications of diabetes, and I saw his life taken away from him a piece at a time. And my fear, of course, being so obese, was that I would be diabetic, and I'm not. I'm not even pre-diabetic. It's a miracle. And so the most important is just the miracle. My life is really a miracle today. I think it's a medical miracle for someone who is as obese as I was to be a healthy weight. I have a life that's filled with joy and service and love and connection inside the program and outside the program. I have healthy relationships and boundaries, and it's all there because of this program. So I'm very grateful. I'm grateful to have been asked to speak and to kind of revisit this journey myself. And so one day at a time, we're all doing it together. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Now, Elisa will lead us in the question and answer time.
Hi, my name is Elisa. I'm a compulsive overeater. So I will go ahead and read the first question. Is it good to have a sponsor who is abstinent?
Boy.
I actually don't think that's a question. I think it's from David saying it's good.
It's good to have a sponsor. Yes, it's good to have a sponsor who's abstinent. I think it's critical. I think it's critical to have a sponsor that's abstinent.
First question, actually, technically. For Aaron, do you believe it is necessary to give up sugar in order to achieve abstinence?
Boy, I can't answer that for you or anyone, really. I can only answer it for me. I'm a sugar addict, so it was. In my disease, I would eat sugar all day long. That was my, over anything else. And when I'm eating sugar like that, it is like I am drugged and my life is a mess. And I have found that because this is a disease, you know, it's an allergy of the body and a compulsion of the mind. And when I get sugar in my body of any sort, my disease is off and running. I'm not afraid of eating sugar. I have a healthy respect for those people I've seen and who have shared with me the thought that they could eat sugar again and tried it and, you know, had to struggle to get abstinent again. So if you're a sugar addict, you know, any food that I think of all the time, like that's not a food that I can eat. So I don't know for anyone else, but for me, yes, I had to quit eating sugar, but it wasn't a simple road. I don't want to make light of that. It was, you know, there were some things that happened along the way, but yes, for me, I did have to.
Thank you. Aaron, with your recovery from compulsive eating, did you find yourself also becoming less compulsive in other areas of your life?
Oh, that's a good question. Two things come up for me. I didn't talk about this, and I'm certainly happy to talk with anybody who was interested, but what has come up with me now that I have a little bit of, you know, abstinence under my belt is that compulsive behaviors, I really noticed those a lot more around food and otherwise. But I will say that when I took my drug of choice away, the drug that I used to anesthetize myself and not have feelings, I found that I was a pretty anxious person, a pretty fearful and anxious person. And that was surprising to me. And I then had to be willing to work my program around, you know, we're looking to get to those things, right? When we take away the food, which was the solution for a long time, then I had to. So to answer your question, I did find that some of the other behaviors in my life became more acute for a while, but with working the steps and with higher power and with support, those have gotten, I've found recovery from those as well.
Thank you. Next question. When a fellow says, I eat no sugar, are they talking about all sugar, like in fruit, or just recreational sugar?
I think it varies from person to person. For me, I eat fruit. I don't eat, you know, it's a great, I heard a speaker once say that when he works with people and they say they don't eat sugar, and he says, well, what do you mean? He says, do you sit in front of a bag of sugar and put it in your mouth? You know, sugar in what form? You know, and I thought, oh yeah, that's actually helpful. So for me, it relates to what triggers me, right? Because that's why I don't do it. It acts like alcohol in my body. You know, it triggers me to want more. And if it tastes like more, probably not a good idea. For me, eating sugary foods, things that look like a dessert, you know, there's never enough. My body shuts down. I could eat it for the next 3 months. You know, I don't put those things in my body. There are foods that have sugar in them that can sit in my refrigerator until they're 10 years past the date that I use once in a while. And I don't worry about those foods because they don't trigger me. They don't taste like more. They taste like a little bit of something, you know, a condiment, for example. Having said that, I know people for whom it is important that they can't have sugar in any form. So they need sugar-free condiments and those sorts of things. And I know people for whom food is triggering. So I think it really, like Erin said, the last person, she said, I can't answer that for you. I think it's up to you to figure it out. But I know many people who are triggered by high flour, high butter fat, high sugar foods, you know, and we have to let them go. But I also know people who can have a little bit and they do their three meals a day and they're fine. So it really is. Unlike alcohol, one of the challenges in OA is finding what works for you, finding what your triggers are.
I think I'll just echo what Catherine, you said that beautifully. For me personally, I can't, you know, answer for any one person. For me personally, not having sugar is more about processed and refined sugar. I can eat fruit, I can have honey, I can have things, you know, I think as Catherine said, there's condiments in my fridge. But it took a lot for me to figure out what works for me and what doesn't. And that's just through a willingness. So I move forward. You know, what I ask for God for every day is the willingness to be open to finding out that maybe there is something that doesn't work for me. But for right now, it's really, I guess, more refined sugar. And I think it's really personal.
And I'll just quickly jump in and say that for me, just to clarify, I don't do any refined sugar. I don't do any honey. I don't do any syrup. I don't do any sugar in any form. And I don't do any fake sugar because that's just like a gateway drug for me. If it tastes like it's sweet, I want the real stuff. So that's me, right? Like I have a real, yeah, I'm a real low bottom sugar person. So.
Thank you. Okay. So the next one. I have an abstinence and food plan that is simply not eating after 3 p.m. every day. I haven't heard of this with others. It seems to work well since all of my compulsive overeating was at night in front of the TV. Are there any pitfalls that you can alert me to? I've been abstinent for 2 months. This appeals to me because of its simplicity, like not drinking if an alcoholic. It has been easy, which I didn't anticipate. I've done a number of different food plans and abstinences, which never seem to work for me, but this one does.
Yeah, great. Like thumbs up. I don't know how anybody else feels, but I think you answered your own question, right? It works for you and it feels easeful. I might gently suggest just, you know, that question might be, if you have a higher power, to toss that question up to higher power. And, you know, I usually get answers to those kind of questions from my divine, my higher power. But if it's working for you, fantastic.
Yeah, I second that.
Yeah, I third that.
Thank you. All right. Can a compulsive overeater make a plan on his or her own? Or is a dietitian required for making a food plan?
I can pick that one up since I have did consult with the dietitian, I don't think anything is required, you know, but I don't know that you can do it on your own. This is a program of we. And that was probably the single most important thing I had to learn, is that my disease is tricky, it's sneaky, and that I had to be willing to follow direction. I had to learn to take instruction from those who came before me. So for some people, that is seeing a dietitian. I think if one sees a dietitian, it's really important that that person understand Overeaters Anonymous. I got some really bad advice from a very good dietitian once. That actually is what sent me into my last relapse, because she didn't really understand that I was a sugar addict, you know, and she thought I could have a little bit. Well, there was no such thing as a little bit for me. And it all just tasted like more. So no, I guess the short answer is no, it's not a requirement. There's not a single thing in our literature that says you must see a dietitian, but can it be helpful? Yeah, it can be very helpful.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, I've not seen a dietitian, but I think the important part is not doing it alone. As Catherine said, it's a program of we. I can never come up with a food plan by myself, because that will just lead to destructive eating. That's something I've had to learn. So yeah. Through working with my higher power and trusted fellows, food partners, my sponsor, I came up with a plan. You know, we came up with a plan that worked, but I didn't speak to a dietitian.
Thank you. Catherine, has your food plan changed as you've lost weight?
Yes, it has. You know, I mentioned that I used to have a snack, and my food plan is for very slow weight loss, which has been very good for me, because it's not a diet. It's how I'm going to eat forever. And so the way I work it is that it's very close to what my eventual needs will be. And I had to eliminate the snack to keep losing weight, because I got to a point of stability. And that's one of the things about working with this nutrition is not going crazy about it, right? Because when I got there, I was like, oh, maybe I need to just, you know, I wanted to get extreme. And she was like, let's just tweak it a little. Let's just do a little bit of this or that. And so, yeah, it does change, because as you lose weight, you don't need as many calories. And every time I've had to do that, I get scared at first. Mm-hmm. And then after about a month, it's like what I do. Like, I was really nervous about giving up my snack, and now it's like 3 meals a day. That's what I do. It's plenty of food. So yeah, it has changed.
Thank you.
Oh, can I add one more thing? It's also changed as I've aged. Because if I ate when I was in my 20s, the way I'm eating now, I would have been skinny. You know, I just don't need as much food. And I've had to accept that. I've had to have big acceptance around the fact that at this age, and I, you know, and I do get physical activity, but at this age, I just don't need as much food.
Thank you. Next question. Is the Region 1 food diary the same as the journal?
Yeah, it's in the journal. It's the little tiny square at the top left of the journal. You got it there, Erin. Can you show it?
So it's this guy, right? This beautiful, amazing journal. And then here, I can show you. That's sort of mine right here, is that little thing that Catherine was talking about, right? Yeah.
And I think all of the regional diaries are set up that way, to have this little place where you can plan your food at the beginning of the day or record it at the end of the day.
Thank you. Next question. I'm familiar with all the prayers mentioned by Catherine, but what is the second step prayer?
Oh, shall I can type it in the chat, but that is the one that says, as I reveal myself to you, please reveal yourself to me. As I seek the truth, please show me the light that I may find the way, my way. And I'll put it in the chat.
It's funny, Catherine. I also give that to like one of my sponsees when we're working on their fourth step. That I think that's what we use. So yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Next question. Does your abstinence from sugar include artificial sweeteners and or sugar substitutes? Or Catherine?
Yes, it does. Because I loved what Erin said about being gateway drugs. It actually helps my body to not expect that sweetness all the time. I mean, I never thought I'd drink black coffee. Well, I didn't put sugar in my coffee anyway, but I never thought I'd drink black coffee, but I do now and it's fine. So yeah, I don't do artificial sweeteners. And part of that is because I just don't like putting stuff I can't pronounce in my body. That's just a personal choice more than a OA choice, but I don't use artificial sweeteners.
Thank you. What do you do when your food gets sloppy? Does it make you doubt if you are abstinent?
I would approach that one. I would say that, and I think I'm probably reiterating, I think I said this, is that, you know, the food is a symptom. My abstinence is sugar, no sugar, and really no flour. Some of you probably have shared this and have known this, and I've heard this from others, is that, you know, flour is a time-release sugar in my body. So I do also, I'm abstinent from flour as well. But what was the question? I got off on some tangent. What was the question?
Let me repeat it. What do you do when food gets sloppy, and does it make you doubt if you're abstinent?
Gotcha. What I wanted to say about that is that food's a symptom. So yeah, when I find myself eating off my food plan, because that does happen on occasion, what I plan for the day or what I normally eat and I eat something different, it usually just lets me know that I've got some feelings going on. I do not have shame around it. That is a gift I've gotten from this program. I have not felt shame around my food for a long time now, but it does indicate to me that I'm probably not talking to folks enough. I'm probably not doing some things that the tools I know will help me. So the food, if my food getting sloppy is usually a symptom that I probably need to be willing to do some more work around my program and to dig in a little deeper. So that's my experience. It's an indicator.
Thank you.
Kelly, did you want to say something about that?
Sure. I think that a really important thing for me that I have very, very slowly learned is that it is imperative that I not beat myself up about my food, because what I used to do is I would go on a self-prescribed diet of basically eating little to nothing, lose a lot of weight, and then I wouldn't be able to control myself and I would just go for it because I would decide that I wasn't worth it. So when my food gets sloppy, which it certainly does sometimes, it is, as Erin said, a symptom of something else. It's a symptom of something that's going on. It's not about the food. My food is never about my food. It's a way to basically kind of stop myself from having any kind of feelings. Mm-hmm. So it's important in those moments to reach out and tell somebody how I'm feeling. Be honest, like I said, say, you know, I really want to eat things in particular, like around, I was pretty lucky in that I wasn't having a lot of food thoughts. And then recently around the election, I was feeling really anxious and I was having a lot of food thoughts. And I was just really honest about it with as many people as possible. And if I get sloppy, I really ask for the willingness to have no guilt or shame. And that can be really hard. But that is what I know that I need in order to actually maintain my abstinence.
Thank you. Next question. I was diagnosed with inflammation of the stomach lining, gastritis. Have the panelists dealt with this?
I have other inflammatory autoimmune conditions. And so my food plan actually really helps me with that. Because for those conditions, sugar is one of the things that's recommended you get off of, and another is gluten. It's kind of an outside issue in a way off of this, but I don't do gluten because of that. And it's not so much because of my compulsive eating, but because of inflammation. And so that's an example of another place where a nutritionist, a good nutritionist, can help someone know, gosh, I've got this thing. Now, what do I do? How do I adjust my food plan so I can stay abstinent with this other health condition that I have to deal with?
Thank you. Next question. I'm new to the program. My sponsor said in the weekly meeting that she is not abstinent. How do I say I don't think she should be my sponsor?
Gosh. That's an inside job. That's a higher power job, right? In my mind, which is, gosh, I feel for your sponsor, certainly. But I, you know, that thing we say, right? When you're looking for a sponsor, look for somebody who has what you want, but also look for somebody who has what they want, right? Who wants what they have. So if I'm, sponsees keep me abstinent, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's the truth, because I can't show up for a sponsee, for me personally, right? I can't show up all high, right? I mean, I think they would know. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't, but I would know. So that's my thought about me personally sponsoring. But I guess I would say to really ask your higher power what you might do about that and ask for guidance around it. And also ask other fellows what they've done around that. I know that's what you're doing now, which is beautiful. But if your higher power is giving you an indication that this is no longer a good fit, and also if it is going to affect your recovery and your abstinence, I think that's something, you know, my abstinence and recovery comes first before anything. So I don't know, Catherine. Yeah. Or
I think the thing we worry about, and what my hunch is, if I were asking that question, what would be behind it would be, I don't want to hurt her feelings. I don't want to make her feel bad. I think I need something else, but how do I do that? And honest to God, that kept me switching sponsors for a time when I should have, till my sponsor got the nerve to fire me. I think how you do it is as simply as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of the things Aaron said, you know, you say, you know, I think it would be best for my recovery. I mean, I can't give you words, but if I was going to do it, I'd probably say something like, I really appreciate all you've given me, but I need a sponsor who's abstinent. And then in doing that, I would remember that what other people think of me is none of my business. Her response to that is between her and her higher power, or him and his higher power, and it's not your responsibility. And you might even be doing them a favor. You don't know. You know, you've just got to take care of your own side of the street. And if your side of the street is telling you that you need something else, then for your recovery, it's really important to go after it.
Thank you. Next question. One of the speakers mentioned needing to fire her sponsor. Can you elaborate on how you did that? I'm new to OA within the last 2 months, and my sponsor is very obviously struggling with mental health issues. Our step meetings have not been productive, and I feel like I'm missing a key component of the program. How do I gently let my sponsor know it's not working for me? So we kind of just addressed that, but if anyone has anything to add.
I don't really have anything to add. I think.
Nor do I. I feel like we probably said all that we knew.
Thank you. So next question. Regarding being a sugar addict, if you have abstained from sugar for months or years, is reintroduction of sugar hazardous to my serenity? It seems like over time, the amount of sugar slowly creeps up until it becomes a craving. Has anyone found a way to consume sugar in moderation without an escalation?
I can speak to this quickly, because it's a pretty quick answer for me personally. And again, this is me. It's personal to everyone. No. And I actually knew that before I even came into OA, because I, in those times, like I said, you know, I would go on a self-inflicted insane diet, and then I would find myself driving to the grocery store. My personal drug of extreme choice is ice cream. Let's be honest about that. Driving to the grocery store to buy as much as possible so that I could eat it all. And it could have been 3 weeks, it could have been 3 days, it could have been, I don't think I ever made it past about 3 months, but it didn't really matter if I hadn't eaten it. I can just tell one bite and I'm kind of over with. But that's, again, just me personally. So I think food is very personal to each person.
I will jump in and say, because I feel you say sugar and my ears go, whoop, what? I have an allergy of the body. And I do absolutely believe that to be true. Sugar to me is an alcoholic food. So there is no amount of sugar that I can put in my body that will not trigger that allergy. I guess I could say maybe there is. I'm absolutely not willing to risk that. I'm not willing to risk it because I don't know if I could get abstinence back. I don't know. And why try? Right. Like I don't want to take that risk. I'm not afraid of it, but I'm not willing to take that risk. I just, yeah, similarly to Kelly, I know that there's no amount of sugar that I can have in my world at all. It does not work for me. I can do some research, I suppose, but like I said, I'm not really willing to.
I'll add to what Erin said, sort of ditto. I mean, what got me into my big relapse was a nutritionist who suggested and a therapist who suggested that I try intuitive eating, which meant, yeah, that lasted, I don't even know, it was like 0 to 120 back into the sugar. And my therapist actually apologized later. I went in and said, I can't do this. These are like alcohol. And I was feeling bad. She said, you shouldn't feel bad. She said, I owe you an apology. She actually apologized. And thank God for program, I got that abstinence back, but I don't know if I would have. And so, for me, I know it's one day at a time, and that's what got me there. I can only do it one day at a time. I mean, if you had told me when I came into program that I would for decades give up my favorite binge foods, I would have said you were out of your mind. But this program got me there. And now they're not, it's like Erin said, if it's not an option, it's not an issue. I just don't care anymore. I was on a tour where I have to say where we actually had a demonstration at the best place that makes this in a foreign country. And I was going to sit out and our tour guide was like, no, come in. You can come in and sit with us. And I was able to sit there for an hour and a half smelling this stuff and watching everybody eat it. It was okay. You know, it was okay because I have recovery and I have program and I know that food is not mine. I understand the longing to hope that you can sometime have it back, but I'm happy you're not going there.
The thing that comes up for me is that little phrase, I'm a pickle now, I'm never going to be a cucumber again. So I can't have sugar again. Like, I know that to be true. If I were an alcoholic, I wouldn't have alcohol again. Right. So, you know, no alcoholic I know say, well, I'll just have a one drink. Like, that's how I am with sugar. I can't just have one. Like, and if I don't want to find out, but I am a pickle and I will never be a cucumber again. And that's okay. Cause pickles are cool.
Thank you. Go pickles. All right, next question. Any suggestions on how to find a food partner besides going to different meetings and asking? Is it included in a virtual sponsor list on Region 1?
I don't know about whether it's included, but going to meetings and asking, I think that's a great idea.
I think that the only thing I would add is that for me, the first food partner I ever had came up to me at the end of a meeting. And I was really new in program and very afraid of being in it other than just going to some meetings. And I said yes, even though I was scared. So, and that was a great gift. So yes.
Thank you. Catherine, how do the skills you have learned in working your food plan transfer to your working your action plan in your life?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think it's all about commitment to the program and working the tools, right, and the steps. So the food plan is one tool, and it's all about just that willingness and, you know, having willingness to put all these things it tells me to do into action. My worst one is still the phone. All these years in program, I have to say, but I do it. And it does translate. It's like, okay, this works, but I also have to do this, 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 and this. There's 9 tools. And then there's the steps. And it's a program of action and a program of asking. So I guess it translates, because if I'm really working a program, I have to do all of it to be in recovery, or it's just a diet. I don't know, anybody else want to answer that too?
Yeah, the one thing I would say in terms of, I think the question was food plans and action plans, and I'm sorry if I lost it, the question a little bit. You know, it's similar to what I think, what I said earlier, which is my food is never about my food. My food is about feelings. And when I am having a lot of feelings, so for me personally, every morning I start the day before I do anything by writing. I do a little bit of reading and I do writing and prayer and meditation. And a lot of times my writing, I used to think it needed to be this like perfect thing. And sometimes it's just an action plan. And I get that from higher power, what it needs to be. But the action plans usually come about because I can tell that I'm already having a lot of feelings. And for me, that's usually anxiety about my work day. A lot of the time, all the things I think I have to get done. That's what my brain says. I have to get all these things done, and how am I going to do it? And I start to spiral out. So having an action plan, using the tools, those all just go in hand with my food plan. They're just, I have to use all of them in order to stay abstinent. I guess Catherine said, if I didn't, it would just be a diet. And I definitely am terrible at sticking to diets. So I need everything else in the program too.
Thank you. Next question. I'm currently sponsoring someone who is eating a high carb diet. I don't want to tell them what not to and to eat, but I know that carbs are very addictive. Any ideas on how I should talk to her about it?
I'll say something briefly, and I imagine you might have some thoughts around this as well. I can probably count on the number of times on 2 fingers that I have brought up a sponsee's food to them, and I don't think either time it went well. And so unless the sponsee brings it up to me, what they eat is none of my business, right? We work the program, we work the steps, the big book, and higher power is in charge of their food. And it's just, yeah, it's my experience and what my sponsor never commented on my food. And so that's the way I've sponsored.
Yeah, I'm with you, Erin. And I love what my sponsor, so most of the time conversations about my food with my sponsor come because I bring it up. But one of my favorite questions she asks is, how's it working for you? And you know, different people's bodies are different. There may be people who can do just fine on a high carbohydrate diet. We have to be really careful about not judging their insides by our insides, you know? And if it's supposed to evolve, maybe that's all they can do right now. And maybe it'll evolve, you know?
I want to say something really brief. I'm not a sponsor, but I am sponsored and I share my food with my sponsor. And my biggest fear in doing that and sharing my food with anybody is that I would be judged, because I judge myself constantly. And I would say that I think one time my sponsor asked me about the fact that I wasn't eating breakfast. And that was, I had already been thinking about it. And that's like all we've ever talked about my food, unless something's not working for me. And that is actually paramount to my program in terms of me not hiding. So everybody's food is really personal, is what I would say.
That's the end of our seminar for today. And I want to thank our speakers. You were just amazing. And I learned a lot, and I really appreciate it.